had no experience whatsoever in the NGO or humanitarian world. And I believe for good reasons, it seems certainly religious devotion after 9/11 or just around 9/11 and wanted to set up an NGO. But he quickly became acquainted with people at the Pentagon, and there was a now retired general, Jerry Boykin, who was a three-star general under Rumsfeld, who ran their intelligence unit, who created this program and a series of cutouts to fund Hiramine so that he could go abroad as a spy for the Pentagon. Really remarkable story.
And finally, the significance of all of these missionary, as you call them, spies.
Well, I think it's important to remember that most of the organization and most of the people working on that program were unwitting. That's what was galling. The issue is that the minute you use humanitarians, missionaries as your cover, you put them in danger. And the worst
part is...
Missionaries in danger. And the worst is the people who were doing the work had no idea.
I want to thank you both for being with us. A fascinating hour. We're going to continue this discussion after the broadcast and post online at democracynow.org, particularly looking at Yemen and Somalia, the drone strikes. Jeremy Scahill, Matthew Cole, thanks so much for joining us, both with The Intercept. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today, and it is March 25th, Good Friday. That's right, a Good Friday celebration. And, of course, that means that the Sunday is Easter Sunday, for those of you of the Christian persuasion. And I just want to indicate that, first of all, for someone who is not Christian or... not religious, that a glancing look at Good Friday would say, well, what's good about it? You're celebrating the day that a guy got crucified and died? Well, first of all, you should keep in mind for those outsiders who might draw that conclusion. First of all, martyrdom is a big thing in this in the history of the world. It's someone who gives up their life for a cause... is thought of pretty well, usually, for a long time. Maybe just a few years, but usually some of the bigger examples, Socrates, where he was convicted of disturbing the youth, causing unrest by challenging them to think, for like 30 years. And finally they said, we had enough of your troublemaking. They thought he was just going to take the punishment of leaving town. That was one option. But this is, again, in the classical days of Athens, 400 B.C. There you go. Long time ago. But Socrates, one of the great philosophers who's really never wrote anything down himself. It was Plato, one of his students, who actually incorporated Socrates into some of his writings. A character of Socrates. But we do know about the trial that he chose to take hemlock. He chose to take a poison and die for his cause, which was fostering education and critical thinking among the youth, challenging their elders if they thought there was something wrong with what they were doing or the way society was going. So I think that was a pretty good example. And historical Jesus, at least, no disrespect here, but historical Jesus did have his teachings, and some of them were very, very good, I think, even today. And somebody said, in fact, in the 19th century, Christianity would really be a great thing if anybody would ever really try it, that is actually put into practice what the historical Jesus said. Well, and of course, that's my opinion, perhaps, or other people's opinions. And remember, all opinions on this show are the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views about Dearborn and the surrounding area are not necessarily the opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford College. Okay? We thank them, of course, to allow us the freedom of speech on this show. And I do try to be somewhat balanced, and even though we do give opinions, because I think you love those opinions. A lot of people love those wild and crazy opinions, and I do mean crazy in a stupid moronic sense, from political candidates. And I won't mention any names here. I'd be so easy. Talk about, unverifiable facts, outright lies, slander. Okay, when in public you say something that's not true about someone else, that's called slander. And I think that's been done plenty, although you could call it opinion, and therefore the freedom of speech First Amendment does protect that. But I would hope there's a lot of people listening to this unbelievable political campaign season that would just tune it out and reject it right at the beginning. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Did I mention my name? Maybe not. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm a station advisor here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and also the host of this show. John Conroy is off celebrating Good Friday. He's a singer in choir that performs not just one place, but several places. And so a lot of activities today in Christian churches, especially between 12 and 3 p.m., the traditional time of the Way of the Cross or the Stations of the Cross. It used to be pretty much required that Catholics had to attend for the whole 3 hours. If Christ suffered, you have to suffer too. Yes, you do. No, it's a joke. Excuse me for saying that. So many things happening. Let me just go over the list here that we have. And I guess we should try to hit some old news from the papers, although both papers are from this last Wednesday. So that's only 2 days old. So let's take a look at the Times Herald, first of all. I think we mentioned that the Veterans Park construction, which is going to be a war memorial in Veterans Park in front of the Centennial Library, was going ahead. That's over $1 million. But the construction has already started. So if you're driving down Michigan Avenue across from the Ford World Headquarters, you will see that concrete being torn up by huge machines. And they do say here that, and one of the reasons that the fountain, the colorful fountain that was there, put there 20 years ago, just couldn't be, they couldn't afford the maintenance on it, even though the city promised the donors who gave $100,000 to make that fountain in that area possible. The city promised at that time to take care of it in perpetuity. Yeah, well, they found out the cost, and times have changed about how rich the city is, or any city for that matter. And so there you go. And one article, or was a press release somewhere, it's not in the Times Herald, but it actually said that the repair and maintenance on that fountain would be $1 million. And I can't see how that'd be possible. I think that fact has got to be wrong. I read that it would take $20,000 to fix the motor, and another $10,000 a year to keep it going. So yeah, eventually over 30, 40, 50 years, it would add up to $1 million. But I don't think that the fountain repair was costing $1 million. But yes, it would have been. Tens of thousands of dollars each year to keep it going. And I'm sure the city has done something to commiserate or to replace the fountain, I mean, as a memorial for the person that donated it. I mean, $100,000, that's a big donation. So maybe there'll be a small plaque in that area or something, since they're spending over $1 million on the new facility. Maybe there'll be a small plaque there, at least indicating the donation previous, that maybe some of the concrete actually was provided for. Okay, maybe that's true. We'll find out. Maybe, maybe not. But anyway, so that's a done deal. That's happening. And let's see. Okay. Press and guide from this last Wednesday. Henry Ford College weighs tuition hike. Again, a great report in depth about what's happening at the meetings of the Dearborn Board of Education and also Henry Ford College trustees, Katie Hetrick, who actually works for the city of Dearborn these days. I'm not sure if that's full or part-time, but she still continues, I think it's probably full-time, in the public information office. She also continues her great education reporting for the Press and Guide. And I say great because it's in-depth. She sits there, she takes notes, and she writes great stories trying to make sense of everything that happened. A couple in the past few weeks that we just weren't able to cover because of lack of time on this show. And that's, we only have an hour each week, of course. But here's the story. In district, Henry Ford College students could see a 1% in tuition increase starting this fall. Okay. They did discuss at the last Board of Trustees meeting, that's the same group as the Board of Education members, but they put on different hats, so to speak. They become the HFC Board of Trustees, and then they handle HFC issues. So the increase was to increase tuition across the board and raise the fee also for contact hours. I'll explain that in a minute. The proposal will likely be approved at the April 18th board meeting. Under the proposal, in-district students would see tuition rates this fall rise a dollar per credit hour. And in-district means students who have residency in Dearborn. So they get a big discount, almost 50% discount over what the out-of-district students have to pay. So the rise would increase their academic credit hour cost to $93 from $92, okay? For out-of-district students, the cost would rise 1.9%, so there's going to be a bigger percent of increase. And then their total cost for that same one-hour credit is going to be $161. So for a three-credit hour class, which most classes are here, standard, you know, psychology, history, literature classes are all 3 hours credit. So that means that in district, you're going to be paying about $280, and out of district, you'll be paying about $480 for that one class. And now if you're out of state, okay, then you'll see a 2.2% increase to $230 an hour. Out of state means beyond, let's say, Detroit metro area, okay? And the international students coming from Canada or whatever will face a 31% rate increase to almost $300 an hour, which means that their one class, one three-credit hour class, is going to be close to $900. So, boy, talk about a big discount for people living in Dearborn. There's a reason to move to Dearborn if you need that community college education. So most of the board said it's too bad we have to do this, but remember that since fiscal year 2010, state appropriations have increased only 4.3%, and property tax revenues have declined by 29%. That's according to John Sutkowski, vice president of Henry Ford College. He's the financial services director, vice president of financial services. And that's because we have something called the Headley Amendment in place. We voted it in back in, I think, in the 60s. It limits how much property taxes can increase. A full recovery of that income, even if your property values have gone up, your taxes cannot go up because of the Headley Amendment, just a little teeny bit each year. So it's going to take until 2030. That's another 15 years until, well, okay, 14 years, it's 2016, until it equals out. So you're getting a real big tax break, folks. Whoopee. But colleges and the state of Michigan that and the city of Dearborn that depend on that income are being hurt greatly. Tuition rates have increased this school year, but by the way, not last year. So, and 1% for in-district and only 2% for in-district but outside of Dearborn, not too bad, I think. Now, those contact hours, that's where there's some classes. Usually it's like lab time, so there might be, for example, a three-credit class in science area, like biology or something. Then there's 2 hours of lab, okay, something like that. And so you, it used to be, you know, 30 years ago, it was free. It was totally free. The extra contact hours, you only pay for the credit hours. Well, nobody can afford that anymore. We were the exception here at Henry Ford College. There's almost no college, other college in the country that wasn't also charging for the contact hours that are part of the requirements of the class, but they're not directly tied into the credit hours. You see? Okay. And so they've increased from $65 an hour to $89 an hour. So some classes might have 2 contact hours in additional. And by the way, the contact hour rate has not changed in 5 years. And the rate is maxed at 5 contact hours per semester. So you'll never have to pay in a full load of classes, even if they all have extra contact hours, for more than 5 contact hours. Just so you know. Okay. Also in the news with the Dearborn schools, the board rejected 2 offers to buy the former Howe School, which is on Oakwood Boulevard. No information was available. It was discussed during closed session. They've had a couple of proposals over the last few years. They thought it was going to sell quick, even be bought by Oakwood Hospital, now Beaumont Health System. But it hasn't happened yet, and those 2 offers were rejected probably because it wasn't enough money. I'm just saying. There might be something else going on there. Okay. And let's see here. Kind of interesting, a Senate bill. There is a column every now and then in the Press and Guide. It actually comes from the Michigan-Votes.org. Michigan-votes.org. It's a free nonpartisan website created by the Mackinac Center, or if you want to call it Mackinac, Center for Public Policy. And of course, they're the conservative think tank, so they only think conservatively. They're supposedly open-minded, but only in a conservative way. I've pointed that out about them before. But they have some services, like this one, which don't take sides. They're just trying to get the information out there. And that's great. So if you want to know how your state of Michigan representatives, senators and representatives, voted on different bills. Now, most of the bills I call rearranging chairs on the Titanic, the deck of the Titanic. You know, I mean, who cares? In the end run, the boats, the big boat, the ship is going to sink. Okay. Well, they did just one bill that passed the Senate. With all of our representatives in the Senate, all the senators from this area voting for it, it's making operating a motorcycle without a license a misdemeanor, a minor crime, okay? And that passed unanimously. It's going to make operating a motorcycle without a motorcycle endorsement on the operator's driver's license a misdemeanor punishable by a $500 fine and 3 months in jail for a first offense, and up to a year in jail for subsequent offenses. That'll go on your criminal record. Now, little that I know, I question, hey, driving a car without a license, I assume that's a misdemeanor too. It's got to be a big bad, right? Because that's a bigger vehicle. You can do a lot of damage with that, going fast and so on. But I didn't know that we didn't have this situation also true for motorcycles. I would assume there's a lot of younger people that just grab a motorcycle and start riding around just for the fun of it, and they get in trouble. They haven't had proper training. And by the way, Henry Ford College every summer has brought in the Motorcycle Safety Foundation people to offer a fantastic training course for motorcycle riding. And I can't go into all the details today, but it's really fantastic. And anybody who's starting out as a writer, whether you're old or young, take that class first. It's offered at some other schools around the area, but always here, usually in July. Hope it comes back again this year. I took that course to learn motorcycle riding, and boy, it's really good. It's really good. You learn a lot about how to control a motorcycle. It's not the same thing as riding a bicycle, for example. That should be obvious, but it's not, maybe to some people. So thank you for that little update there, although the big issues are never passed unanimously. So, yeah, there you go. There's, an in-depth article here I want to bring your attention to. If you don't have your copy of the Press and Guide, go out and buy one or subscribe along with the Times Herald. We've got to support these guys, even though most of the time they just print press releases. They don't do investigative reporting. They don't have any opinions. They don't give any political endorsements. You know, they don't have the money. They don't have the people. They fired all the reporters full time, you know. So, but Katie Hedrick, she does this fantastic analysis based on information from the schools and, of course, from a school board meeting, but also talking to our superintendent, Glenn Maleko. And it says, constantly changing information from Lansing was a recurring theme during the recent Dearborn Board of Public Schools Board of Education meeting. And it makes it hard to run the schools. For example, the idea of uncertainty from Lansing also came up during a report on next year's budget. They don't know when to do it, how to do it, how much they should set aside, because they don't know how much money they're going to get. And maybe they won't find out early. Maybe they'll find out very late. Trustees would like to eventually grow the balance fund, it's sometimes called a rainy day fund, to about $18 million so the district doesn't have to borrow money, which costs them money, to cover expenses in the summer. Okay, that would be a great idea. They're almost there, but not quite. They only have $13 million from last year, and they hope to add another million, so they've got a few years to go. If they're only putting $1 million in that fund as such. By the way, the bond proposal that was passed by the district, $70 million bond to improve our schools, that did pass. Most of those projects are all done, and they're on time and under budget, and either on or under budget. That President Mary Lane said. By the way, the district still has about $1.4 million in this contingency fund, which will be used for work on the Van Eyck Administrative Building. The building needs a new roof, furniture, air conditioning, and more. And, you know, we talked in the past here, it was pointed out a couple years ago, Mayor O'Reilly thought maybe he could convince the Dearborn Public Schools, instead of spending millions, it's going to take more than $1.4 million to bring Van Eyck up to normal, if you will, or satisfactory even, that maybe they would lease that empty floor in the Dearborn Administrative Center, which they have chosen not to do at this point. And if they still got $1.4 million, what the heck? Why not go and just spend it on the falling apart Van Eyck building, and at least they'll get a new roof, furniture. And I can't believe they can get a new roof, furniture, and air conditioning all for $1.4 million. It seems to me that would be a heck of a much bigger job. Now, maybe they're just going to coat the roof with tar, asphalt or something. Maybe it's not going to be an actual new roof. That might be cheaper. I don't know. But that's the report. So, great report. Read it for yourself. I didn't read it all, of course. Don't have time for that. Okay. Now we're into the hard stories of the week. And I'm going to start with just taking a slight break while I shuffle my papers here. And for a few minutes, we're going to listen to Jack Lessenberry and the report that they do, not every week, but this week they do. And Jack, this is from yesterday, the 24th, Michigan Public Radio did this and made it available to anyone that wants to listen to it, and sort of sums up the week. So Emily Fox and Jack Lessenberry explaining a couple of top stories from this week in Michigan.
Democratic and Republican.
We're going to go out and we will create more and better jobs. And we will be in a great state again.
Let's check in with Michigan Radio's senior news analyst, Jack Lessenberry, to get an update on what's going on in state politics. Well, Jack, the Flint Water Task Force released its final report yesterday. What stuck out to you?
Well, this is a very devastating report from the standpoint of the governor. He appointed this task force, and the task force squarely fixes the blame on the state and primarily on the governor's appointees. The MDEQ comes in for the harshest treatment, also the emergency managers. I'm going to talk more about this at 1:30 today, but the governor has been pushing the narrative in his administration that all levels of government were to blame, trying to push a lot of blame onto the federal EPA. The task force is having none of that. It says the EPA may have been too slow to respond, but primarily this is the governor's burden. It was his emergency managers who made the decision to switch to the Flint River and refused to listen to anybody about switching it back. Darnell Early, who later went on to become the emergency manager of the Detroit Public Schools, is sort of specifically singled out as refusing to listen to even Snyder administration pleas that the water should be switched back, although it was actually Ed Kurtz, the second manager, who made the decision to go to Flint River. It is an utterly devastating report from the standpoint of the governor, and this may well sort of change the focus of some of the investigations. We're not clear.
I was going to say, what happens now that this report is released and more blame has been dealt?
Well, I think it becomes increasingly harder to try to blame the federal government. Of course, Republicans would like to do that. President Obama's a Democrat. Republicans run everything in Michigan. But this task force, which was co-chaired by Ken Sikkema, the former Senate majority leader, a Republican conservative, one of the most respected men in Lansing, the report says very flatly, if I can quote from it, MDEQ caused this crisis to happen. And it says when they were called out on it, they responded with a degree of intransigence and belligerence that has no place in government. It's going to be very hard, harder than it has been for the Snyder administration to sort of try to deflect the blame, and we'll see where the investigations go from there. One thought that occurred to me was that, you know, the governor is having the taxpayers pay $800,000 for his criminal defense, another $400,000 for civil. I would think Darnell Early and Dan Wyatt, the now fired head of the MDEQ, might want to be looking for some lawyers themselves.
The state Senate has adopted a bailout plan for Detroit Public Schools. Tell us what this bill will and will not do.
Well, it won't do anything unless the House passes it. This is essentially the governor's plan, and I must say I think it was a good and sensible plan. It would split the schools into two. It's kind of modeled in a way after the General Motors bankruptcy. The old Detroit public schools would no longer have anything to do with educating the kids. They would pay down the debt. It would come up with $715 million, $300 million in a lump sum, much of the rest from tobacco settlement money over a decade. This new money to allow a new entity to educate the students, also would have oversight over charter schools to some extent in Detroit, could say where they could start and open a new school. And there would be more money, more than $1,000 per kid to educate these students. Most people who've looked at it think it is far superior to what we have now, but the House of Representatives is balking at this. They're not going to take it up till after they come back from a break. They seem more interested in punishing teachers' unions, and in all probability what will happen is the Senate will pass something the House has already passed, a sort of a nearly $50 million stopgap spending bill to get the Detroit Public Schools through the end of the year. If they don't get some new money, they'll have no cash whatsoever to pay anybody after about April the 8th. So they're really sort of playing a game of chicken here, but it'll be very intriguing to see if in this election year Republicans in the House are willing to pass this plan.
So if they do pass this, what do you think this timeline will look like for this bigger bailout plan? When would we start to see drastic changes in the district?
Well, Rome wasn't built in a day, and you can't educate a kid in 5 minutes. So you would certainly see an influx of money into the schools relatively quickly. You'd have a new governance structure. So within a year or two, you might well start to see some difference in test results, but it's going to be some time before the full potential of this takes effect. And the whole purpose, the long-term purpose, is to stop the drain of kids out of the Detroit public schools, because if Detroit is going to work as a city, it has to have a public school system that people will put their kids into. It doesn't have that now.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's senior news analyst. You're listening to Morning Edition on Michigan Radio. Good morning. I'm Emily Fox.
And good afternoon, but thank you, Emily Fox and Jack Lessenberry. You know, all of those commentaries are available for you to download, and you can get them automatically from iTunes if you subscribe to Michigan Radio or Jack Lessenberry specifically. So it is public material. But we do thank Michigan Public Radio, a great nonprofit, non-commercial organization based in Ann Arbor, but covering Michigan news better than anyone else. And of course, WDET in Detroit, 101.9 FM, subscribe to, and they get a lot of reports from Michigan Public Radio that they share on their programs too. All right. A lot of stories here. Oh my goodness. Let's see. I'm going to go quickly down a list of Henry Ford College stories. Oh my gosh. Among all of our sports teams that we have here at the college, supported by student fees, we have wrestlers. Yeah, we have a wrestling team for years. Well, several Henry Ford College student-athletes of the college's National Collegiate Wrestling Association wrestling program qualified for the Nationals, and Jeffrey Henderson was named HFC's first-ever All-American. He finished in fourth place at the 2016 National Collegiate Wrestling Association National Championships, which happened earlier in March at Silver Spurs Arena in Kissimmee, Florida. That's what they call themselves, yeah. So congratulations to HFC wrestlers. That's a really big honor going all the way to the Nationals, so to speak. Something that just officially was done yesterday, the ceremony was on campus, I think, and I couldn't get here, but Henry Ford College, not the college directly, but here at the college, a number of groups made sure that a student got a brand new car after her Jeep was stolen. Henry Ford College student Margaret Height, that's H-E-I-T, did not expect to see her car on the news after it was stolen from her home in Southgate last month. Height's 99 Jeep Cherokee was involved in a tri-county high-speed chase down I-96 on February 29th. The chase, which exceeded 90 miles an hour and was broadcast live on local news stations, ended on Telegraph Road when the thieves totaled the car. To help Height, who has no other means of transportation, the Henry Ford College Foundation partnered with, and I assume, therefore, that Margaret was a nursing student here. So, and also nursing students often have co-op experience that's required with local hospitals. So they got to drive around a little bit, too, to not just come to this campus. So Henry Ford College Foundation, which is the fundraising part of the college, partnered with La Fontaine Automotive Group, the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, and other local organizations to donate a brand new car to the student. Height 21 said she learned her car was crashed in a car chase when her boyfriend texted her a link to the news article about it. When she read it, Height said she was blown away, quote unquote. I was like, whoa, that really is my car and it's total and I'm not getting it back. And this report comes, the story was from the Arab American News. They were the first one to get it into print. I think you'll see it in their, it's on their website right now, arabamericannews.com. Okay. arabamericannews.com. And it's probably in their weekly edition that comes on out, is published, printed for free. You can get it around town for free starting tomorrow on Saturdays. So it was great that all those people came together. It just I know that there's an awful lot of students that need help with an awful lot of things, whether it's food, clothing, housing, cars. So Margaret was just, I don't know, right place, right time. I'd say thank you very much for all that TV coverage that sort of made her famous in a way. Maybe that encouraged people to donate or to get together and to help her. But there's so many people that need help, and there's just not that much money to go around or that many organizations to do it. But congratulations to Margaret Height, and thank you all the organizations, including Henry Ford College Foundation, to pull that off. I mean, the La Fontaine Automotive Group, they should be able to get a good discount on the car. I mean, they could donate it themselves at cost, right? And they said it was a new car. I see a picture here in the story, although I can't identify it. I don't know what brand. Almost looks like a... I don't want to say. I did because I know La Fontaine Automotive Group, they handle an awful lot of different brands of cars. I think they started with only Toyota in Dearborn, and they've expanded to quite a few, if not all brands, anyway, at different locations, too. So anyway, that happened. We have a seminar on campus called College is Possible. It's coming up March 30th. That's next Wednesday from 10 a.m. to noon. Just 2 hours. That's 2 hours of your time. If you've got time during the day, you might have time for classes too, but you think, oh, college is not possible for me. I'm too old, or I don't have enough money, or some other issue. Doesn't mean we can buy you a new car, connecting to the last story. But nonetheless, it's in room 125 of the Learning Success Center, Building A, on the main campus. I think that's right at the front of the campus, in fact, easy to find. But anyway, it's Building A on our main campus here, 5101 Evergreen. And the seminar is presented annually by the HSC Office of Student Outreach and Support. And it will explain the steps students must take to enroll at HSC. It also explains what programs and services are available for enrolled students. Speakers from financial aid and other HSC departments will be present to provide information and answer any questions. So it is free and open to everybody. But reservations are necessary because they got to make sure they have a big enough room. Okay. So for further information about College is Possible, which is going to happen next Wednesday morning, March 30th, from 10 a.m. to noon on the main HFCC campus, you need to call this number, 313-845-9629. That's 313-845-9629. 5101 Restaurant. Yes, they are open through April, which is the end of the winter semester. And just let's say what's coming up next week. It's the week begins with March 28th. The theme of all week is Northern Italian. One of my most favorite cuisines, Northern Italian. Look it up, okay? And if you want to make reservations at the 5101, you know, they do have lunches Monday through, not Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., and dinner hours are from 6 to 7:45 on Wednesday and Thursday evenings. And so the number for reservations is 5101. They're not necessary, but highly recommended, 313-206-5101. That's, again, the name of the restaurant and the address on Evergreen Road here of the main campus. And, of course, that's where the Student Center is, and that's where the 5101 restaurant is. That's where WHFR.FM, the station making waves, also is. Again, reservations for 5101 for lunch or dinner, 313-206-5101. Our Hammond Planetarium is still hosting and will continue through May 4th. Because it's pre-recorded. Nothing Gold Can Stay, a Spring Star Talk. Okay, it runs every Wednesday through May 4th and every other Saturday until April 30th. You can get more information about this at hfcc.edu, our website for the college, because there's all kinds of different days and times in there, but it's free. Nothing Gold Can Stay is narrated by HFC Telecom professor and WHFR general manager Susan McGraw, and also the late HFC Fine Arts instructor, Dale Van Dorp. He recorded part of it, too, before he passed, I guess. Doors open 15 minutes before showtime. So that's Hammond Planetarium, Nothing Gold Can Stay, here at HFCC, all the way through May 4th. The big story is, save the best till last, registration for spring and summer classes at Henry Ford College has now begun as of this last Wednesday. And, of course, you know there's many reasons to take classes at Henry Ford College during the spring and summer 2016 semesters, including a tuition guarantee. That's right. Let me explain that briefly because I just told you about the tuition going up starting in the fall. But, and you'll have to pay that if you're a student here, but if you're already enrolled, by the time you graduate with a two-year degree, you just fill out a form and they will reimburse you for all that extra tuition increases that you've paid since the first semester you began. Ooh, and that's up to, I think they give you about 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years. look at the small print sometime, our tuition guarantee. Also, a no cancellation of classes guarantee. So if you get into that class, you got that class. It won't be canceled out from under you, which did happen until about 5 years ago. We had that situation. Also, there's a transfer credit guarantee with certain classes and most all programs. They will transfer to either another community college or a four-year school pretty much intact. Let's see. Also, we have exceptional partnerships for that transferability with Medina University, Siena Heights University, and Eastern Michigan University. Yep. So that's just a few of the many reasons. And of course, spring semester and summer semesters are shorter than usual, almost about half the time of the full fall and winter semesters, which means if you take a 3-credit-hour class, you'll be going to that class 6 hours a week, but you'll be done in just 7 weeks. See? In and out, pretty fast. A little bit more intense. Not every class is offered that way because some classes need longer time, I don't know, for the education to sink in, for you to do the research and the special projects. Anyway, it's available for a lot of classes, and it's a great way to get a head start on fall semester or make up for some classes maybe that you didn't get yet in previous semesters. Just sneak them in if you got the time. Spring semester begins Tuesday, May 10th and ends Monday, June 27th. The summer 2016 semester begins Tuesday, June 28th and ends Tuesday, August 15th. You can look at the classes available for spring and summer by going to hfcc.edu/webadvisor. Webadvisor. And also, if you've already been admitted to college, it's the same website you'll use to register for classes beginning the 25th. Okay. Just had a bulb go out here in the station. I want to remind you we're going to have a radiothon, our once-a-year pledge drive on air in April, because when the bulbs start going out and we have no replacements, then we know it's time for another pledge drive. Although, luckily, I have enough light here still to read. A couple very important stories from the Arab American News. Again, they're from their website, ArabAmericanNews.com. Probably be in their papers soon. Had to make some kind of comment. I had several different reports nationally about Ted Cruz. One of those presidential candidates, Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz, called on law enforcement agents to, quote, patrol and secure, unquote, Muslim neighborhoods in the United States after the Brussels bombings that claimed more than 30 lives on Tuesday morning. Cruz, second-place presidential hopeful in the GOP race, also urged rejecting refugees from countries with significant al-Qaeda or ISIS presence. ISIS claimed responsibility for the attacks. The senator from Texas was quick to blame the blast on Islamic terrorists. He said Europe is now witnessing the results of a, quote, toxic mist of migrants, unquote, who have been infiltrated by terrorists. He said, quote, we need to empower tax enforcement to patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. And that was all in a press release. That was not an off-the-cuff thing while he was going to the bathroom or something that somebody recorded. He's actually saying those things formally. In a separate statement, he also said the United States is at war with radical Islam. And I didn't know you could do that without approval by Congress, but I think George W. Bush, you know, convinced Congress after 2001 attacks to pass something that pretty much allows the president to do anything he wants to anytime he thinks it's needed. So, as this article goes on from the Arab American News, it says it's not clear what Cruz meant by Muslim neighborhoods, quote unquote. Michigan cities, Dearborn, Hamtramck have a high concentration of Muslim Americans, but they are governed by local, state, and federal laws. Both communities have police departments that maintain law and order in the neighborhoods. Muslim American activist Shafwan Ahmed Slam Cruz saying the senator is taking a page from Donald Trump's playbook to appeal to bigots. Okay. And, quote, Ahmad said, I'm absolutely disgusted that Ted Cruz chose this attack as an opportunity for voter pandering. He went and vilified an innocent community in America that had nothing to do with the attack in Brussels. Unquote. Community activist Asha Noor said, although what Cruz is calling for concerning it is already happening. Noor said the federal government is monitoring Muslim communities through programs like Countering Violent Extremism, also known as CVE. We have already had CVE programs in Boston, Los Angeles, and Minneapolis. They're planning to expand in several parts of the country, she said. There's already increased surveillance in Muslim communities, whether they say there is or not. And we know that the FBI, since 2001, has been in Dearborn, observing, arresting, monitoring, on and off, a few times illegally, in fact. But and I do think it's going to be part of our future world. Number one, if we continue being afraid of every little bug under the rug, I'm sorry, that's the way I see it. All this terrorism, out of 7 billion people in the world, yes, no one should die by our own hands or even accidentally. What the heck? Okay. But it happens every day. And 30 people in Brussels, as someone said, I think, on Democracy Now! This morning, there's 30 or 40 people that died a couple days ago in Africa that hardly got any coverage, and none of the presidential candidates seem to care about them. So all around the world, whether it's, I don't know, some crazy sniper-type person who just wants to kill some people to get famous or something, or whether they're with ISIS or whether they're with whoever or whatever, they're doing bad stuff, and they shouldn't be, but the percent of these incidents, the numbers are very, very small. Yes, it gets it's a big deal if they crash into a building in New York City with a plane. Yes, I know. And it hurts our pride, as well as killing thousands, of course. But nonetheless, you know, let's try to keep it in perspective. This stuff has been happening, and it will happen. It's not necessarily ISIS, but maybe some people are. It's certainly not necessarily Muslims, but some of them, I think, have already proven to be. The problem I have with Belgium is they still haven't arrested all the people that were involved, and they still haven't told us exactly what their motivations were. And here we get presidential candidates saying they're radical Muslims. And they may be, but maybe they're not. There's all kinds of reasons people do these crazy, horrible, violent things. And of course, not just individuals, but countries decide to go to war with each other. How dare they start killing other people when they're not under attack themselves in most cases? That's really crazy. Opinion of yours truly on Good Friday. Just remember that. And the story goes on here from the Arab American News. The activist cited a recent study by the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding saying that that mosque attendance is linked to greater civic engagement, not extremism. According to the survey, Muslims who regularly attend mosques are more likely to vote and cooperate with their neighbors to address community issues. Noor said, this completely dispels the myth that Islam leads to radicalization. Dearborn State Rep candidate Brian Stone encouraged, and he's just a candidate out of many, encouraged denouncing and challenging statements that smear Muslim Americans, saying such rhetoric encourages hate crimes. Quote, he said, the only extra security we need in Dearborn is to protect Muslim Americans from Trump and Cruz supporters, he said. Dearborn is a model the rest of America should be following, not fearing. Okay. So that's hard-headed, and we have interviews with people in the Arab American community, and they should know about these things. Community packed a fundraiser for trustee Fadwa Hamoud. Now, if you don't recognize that name, she is on the Dearborn Board of Education, and, of course, the Dearborn Board of Trustees for Henry Ford College, because it's one of the same groups, right? Now, she was appointed last year by the Dearborn Public School following the vacancy of Amy Scholes, who resigned after accepting a job in Ohio. Now, Hamoud is actually going to try to get that, try to get elected to that position this year, this fall in November. It's a six-year term. Oh, boy. And she just had a fundraiser, and supposedly a lot of people attended. Let's see what I can say about her. She graduated from Fordson High School in 2003. While a student there, she was president of the Key Club in senior class, took part in several school clubs and activities, and was awarded Most Active Student by the National Honor Society. She earned her undergraduate degree from University of Michigan Dearborn. She obtained a law degree from Wayne State University and is now employed as a Wayne County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney. Okay. And she is married to attorney Ali Hamoud, who I thought was trying to run for something, too. I'm going to look into that. I have a list here. He reaches back away from the microphone. We have, so for Dearborn Board of Education, we do have this person. They're announcing right and left because there's a deadline coming up in a month or two. I don't have any other names on my list that I've been jotting down here based on newspaper stories about new candidates. Of course, the city clerk's office in Dearborn would know how many people have taken out petitions to be on the ballot or have submitted petitions in order to be on the ballot for these positions. Okay. I'm looking, and I don't see Ali Hamoud listed for anything. I have a number of candidates for 15th District Michigan House of Representatives, including Brian Stone. It looks like I has a name with a question mark. I'm not sure why on my list here. It's Abdullah Hamoud. May or may not be a relative of Fadwa Hamoud. Common name, just like Smith or Jones, right? We also have Roxanne McDonald from our Board of Trustees and Terrence Rhino Guerin. Also Richard Johnson and Paul Sophia. The deadline is to file by 4 p.m. April 19th, withdraw by 4 p.m. April 22nd, so about a month away. 19th District Court, we know we have Susan DeBaggia and Abby Bazzi, who are both running for William Hulkran's age-limited seat there, or position as judge. 12th District, U.S. House, Debbie Dingell's office. We know that a libertarian, Tom Bagwell, has taken out petitions to be part of that. Okay. Perhaps in the background, and I don't think it's coming through, but through our soundproof walls, our Studio J, which is our performance studio here, which is right in front of our Studio A, where I'm sitting right now, we have a band that's doing air checks and tests and setting up their instruments for a live performance during Kitty Love's Highway 61 show. That will start at 2 o'clock, and as soon as they get all the sound checks done, then they'll go live with the band's performance. And hope you enjoy that. It's going to be great. It's going to be Jennifer Westwood performing today, and it's going to be a great fun time. So hope you stay tuned for that. And of course, more blues after Kitty Love show at 2, followed by Mike Holloway and Going with the Flow from 4 to 6 p.m. So all the blues right here when we need them most on a Friday. Yes, sirree, Bob. Okay. Last week, I was talking to the gentleman, the representative from Ahmadiyya organization, and one of their awareness campaigns is Muslims for Peace. They had a seminar on campus this last Wednesday, 2 days ago, where they definitely stated, and the stories in Arab American News and also in the Press and Guide lead story for this weekend, they're not for terrorism, okay? That's not what they're all about, this representing the Sunni Muslims in America, at least. And I'm sure that's true for the other Muslims, of course. But that was the peace was the whole idea. And I had mentioned to him when we talked on the air during this show last Friday about peace organizations that I've been associated with. Well, on and off, but I keep in touch. You know, Peace Action of Michigan is a big one, as well as Pax Christi, which is related to the Catholic Church. But anybody that's in favor of peace, I'm in favor of the peace. I'm in favor of them. You know how it is? Mi casa y su casa, that sort of thing. Or su casa y mi casa, whatever. The history. I said Pax Christi started right here in the Detroit area in the 1960s and spread throughout the U.S. Not true. Here's a little history of Pax Christi. In 1945, a small group of people in France met regularly to pray for peace. Their concern was not a vague one. It's war. World War II is still going on. What bothered them, what kept them coming together, was their experience of an agonizing and dreadful fact. French Catholics and German Catholics, who professed the same faith and celebrated the same Eucharist, had killed one another by the millions in the 20th century, both World War I and World War II. You know, French and Germans fighting. That situation could hardly be the will of God as they understood it, so they prayed for forgiveness, for reconciliation, for the peace of Christ. And a French woman, Marthe Dortel-Claudot, is known as the leader and founder of the movement. She invited a French bishop, Pierre-Marie Théas, to be first bishop, president, and while in German prison war camp in World War II, Bishop Théas had already begun to pray and work for reconciliation. Soon after World War II, Pax Christi centers were established in France and Germany. By the other 50s, the movement had spread to Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, Australia, Switzerland, and Belgium. It began in the United States in 1972. And there was no official office or staff until 79. But I really believe, yeah, we were one of the first places that we had that organization. I believe that Father Thomas Hinsberg was instrumental in the U.S. Organization of Pax Christi. And I knew him personally, by the way. The office for Pax Christi moved to Erie, Pennsylvania in 1985. That was when WHFR began on the air, and 30 years ago, and 31, and remains there today. In 2002, the Washington, D.C. office was opened also and is currently located at the Center of Concern. And aren't we all concerned about what they're doing there? Oh, my gosh. So Pax Christi is active in more than 50 countries with a growing presence in Latin America and Africa. And I think they will accept members, by the way, who aren't even Catholics. So there, I hope so. There's no sort of requirement that you're giving money every week or you're signed up as membership for a local parish. But they do more than just pray, too, by the way. They have marches. They have organizations that are out there even today on Good Friday doing peace marches as part of Good Friday. Mm-hmm. In 1982, speaking in Coventry Cathedral in England, Pope John Paul II said, "Like a cathedral, peace must be constructed patiently and with unshakable faith." Membership in Pax Christi enables many Catholics and other Christians of all walks of life to help build the cathedral of peace. And I'm just happy that a lot of people are working for peace these days, because that's what we need. No reason to kill. That's my feeling. I'll stand by that as long as it takes. Here's a reflection also from Pax Christi. You can get on their mailing email list for these little comments from them about the organization. No charge. Okay. Today is, of course, as I said, thought of as Good Friday. And these are reflections from Tom Cordaro, who is the Pax Christi USA Ambassador of Peace. He sort of speaks for the USA in that organization. And Jesus answered him, this is from John 19:11. Jesus answered him, "You would have no power over me." So look that one up. But Tom Cordaro says, "The gun or the cross, which is the source of true freedom? Which is the path to a life that is fully human and fully alive? For those who live at the heart of empire, who are born into power and privilege denied to others because of race, class, gender, sexual orientation, religion, or national origin, the gun guarantees the status quo. For those denied power and privilege, the gun represents the desire to seize control, to upend the status quo, and to replace the overlords. Good Friday poses a choice. Do we put our trust in the power of redemptive violence, the belief that peace can be gained through violence, or the power of redemptive suffering, the belief that peace becomes possible through the practice of reconciliation and unconditional love at personal cost? The NRA and the military-industrial complex spend millions of dollars lobbying for the virtues of redemptive violence. But the way of the cross, practiced by believers for over 2,000 years, has thwarted the plans of armies and empires. The cross also reminds us that victory does not come without costs, and those costs must be borne by those who pick up their cross to follow Jesus. Those who trust in the gun are prepared to kill and destroy to achieve victory. Those who embrace the way of the cross are prepared to sacrifice their lives to achieve victory. So, good thoughts, whether you're Christian or not, I think. And that's about all we have for today's show of the new WHFR Journal. As I said, stay tuned for a live performance by Jennifer Westwood and a big group of people who are with her today in Studio J, and that'll be coming up in just a few moments. All I can say further, John Conroy, as I said, is not here today, but it's the last Friday that you can get fish fries because it's the end of the Lenten season. And in Dearborn, O'Kelly's Banquets and O'Kelly Lounge on Park Street today from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Okay? 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. today, Park Place. Big fish fry and all kinds of other things that they're featuring there. And also the Lenten fish fry if you're down in Grosse Ile at the Sacred Heart Parish Hall down there. Today is the last day from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Big menu there, fish, but all kinds of other things too. So that might be a nice just nice thing for the family to do. It's food, good food, but it's the last Friday for the fish fry. Wherever. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. New WHFR Journal. I do thank the Times Herald, the Press and Guide, the Arab American News, and Michigan Public Radio for being the sources that helped me so much with this show, and Henry Ford College, of course, at all times. Take care out there. We'll be back next week. No fooling, April 1st. This is WHFR Dearborn. Time. That's where my baby stays.